Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. What a week. The news many thought they might never hear. Al-Qaeda leader and terrorist icon Osama bin Laden dead, and the world reacts. Late Sunday night, the president shared the news. Navy SEALs had gone in. The deed was done.
Tonight, I can report to the American people and to the world that the United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden, the leader of Al-Qaeda.
What did Pakistan know? U.S. criticism was harsh. Pakistan's foreign secretary made no apology.
The Pakistan security forces are neither incompetent nor negligent about their sacred duty to the nation, that is to protect Pakistan.
And at home, the news sank in for days. Jefferson and Alison Crowther, whose son died at the World Trade Center on 9/11, had a message for President Obama and the commandos.
Our message was thank you. Thank you. Thank you for bringing
man out of our world and our civilization.
The personification of evil and taking that person out of our world.
This hour, On Point, our weekly news roundtable with Karen DeYoung of The Washington Post, Kenneth Walsh of U.S. News and World Report, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join the conversation. How is bin Laden's death, its meaning, the way it happened, sinking in for you? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Karen DeYoung is senior national security correspondent and associate editor at The Washington Post. She has been all over the bin Laden story this week. Karen, thanks very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Kenneth Walsh is chief White House correspondent for U.S. News and World Report, author of the new book, Family of Freedom. Kenneth Walsh, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Thank you, Tom.
And hello, Jack. Thanks for joining us today.
Hello, Tom, Karen, and Ken.
So here we are, bin Laden dead, the whole country just taking this on board day by day. And the issue I want to come to you with first, Karen, is around Pakistan. Right from the get-go, it was out there. How could they not have known? Here was John Brennan, the president's top counterterrorism advisor, talking Monday about Pakistan's possible role in sheltering Osama bin Laden.
We are looking right now at how he was able to hold out there for so long and whether or not there was any type of support system within Pakistan that allowed him to stay there. I think it's inconceivable that bin Laden did not have a support system in the country that allowed him to remain there for an extended period of time. I am not going to speculate about what type of support he might have had on an official basis. Inside of Pakistan. We are closely talking to the Pakistanis right now.
Of course, a support system in the country, as he points out there, doesn't necessarily mean anything official. But what about this relationship at the end of this week, Karen, and where it stands?
Well, I think you have to start from the fact, as many U.S. officials have pointed out, we need Pakistan. Regardless of how this ends up, Pakistan is a crucial partner in the Afghan war, and I think that the administration, barring some very high-level, top-level knowledge and support for bin Laden, I think that they are hoping to smooth this out at some point. You know, I think it has to be assumed that the administration already knows the answer to those questions. They've been watching this compound very, very carefully for some time in terms of who went in and out, who was supplying it. They've made some progress in determining who constructed it, who put in the security systems. And so the question now is, how are the Pakistanis going to respond to this? So far, they've responded in private with a bit of, oh my gosh, we're going to find this out, but in public with very strident statements, most assuredly directed toward domestic consumption, of saying this was a violation of our territorial integrity. It better not happen again. We are very angry about this. And I think the question is what their posture is going to be over the next few weeks. The administration feels like it has a little leverage with the Pakistanis now to perhaps smooth out what has been a very bad relationship for a very, very long time. The question, again, is whether the Pakistanis can overcome the need to appear strong and competent to their own people in order to make the changes that the Americans now expect and show a real commitment to their joint counterterrorism fight.
Strong denial of any support for bin Laden. Here was Pakistan's Foreign Secretary Salman Bashir in Islamabad yesterday.
It's easy to say that the inter-services intelligence or elements within the government were in cahoots with the Al-Qaeda. This is a false hypothesis. This is a false charge.
The word from Islamabad yesterday. Kenneth Walsh, roll the tape back with us for a minute here to that late Sunday night announcement by the president in the East Room at the White House, and then everything that has unfolded since. You've covered the White House for a long time. There were years in which the death of bin Laden seemed to recede. It seems to me George Bush at a certain point even began to say, well, it doesn't exactly matter anymore. And then, boom, here it was. And it was huge in the American mind, Ken.
It was. Well, I've covered the White House since 1986, quite a long time, five presidents now. And this was really one of those electric moments that one gets rarely covering the White House. But as you say, Tom, I remember President Bush saying, when asked at a news conference about bin Laden, said, well, I really don't care where he is anymore. This is just one person. This was a shift at the time because, of course, he had made a big objective of capturing or killing bin Laden.
Enormous, then dead or alive.
Yes, dead or alive. And then that shifted because, you know, we were not finding him. It was much more difficult. He was taking some criticism for it. So they backed away from this bin Laden mission to get bin Laden. I remember that very vividly. And so that has been sort of the case. It's been sort of submerged as an issue in Washington. And the focus had gone elsewhere in the war on terrorism, which President Obama, of course, doesn't even like to use that phrase. And then I remember Sunday night just getting emails about this big announcement the White House was going to make. And then it became clear about 11 o'clock or so that this was a bin Laden announcement. So we all were assuming that it was something big about bin Laden. And I just reviewed my emails just before coming on with you, Tom.
Yeah.
And it was at 11:35 that President Obama went out and made his statement. And that sort of then, of course, it was a very chaotic situation there to try to, from the media perspective and really for the country, to find out what happened. And
still
I think,
trying to find out in a way. So many versions have come out
yes.
through this week.
Exactly. And, you know, we hear a lot about the fog of war and the difficulty of trying to find out what actually happened in a case like this. And I remember President Bush, the father, who I covered and who had been director of Central Intelligence,
sure.
saying that the first reports about a military operation or crisis are almost always wrong. But we tend to forget that. And in the rush to get this story out, the White House and the media, I think we all sort of pushed too hard to get an account that initially that turned out to be wrong. And just one other quick point about that is it seems that even now there's I have a real question about how the White House has handled this. Of course, I like the idea as a journalist that they tried to put out information. But it seems to me that a lot of it was couched in classic or inside Washington public relations, what the president did, a lot of the first person singular and so on, when I think what the country is most impressed and proud about is that this military operation seemed to be so amazingly successful. And a lot of people are very proud of that. And I think that there was sort of a misplacement of the description of this operation to make it too much in the context of the president and not of these amazing Navy SEALs that pulled this off.
Well, that may be, though. Yesterday, President Obama was at the Manhattan fire station that had lost 15 men on 9/11 and talked there about the operation itself and those who carried it out.
It's some comfort, I hope, to all of you to know that when those guys took those extraordinary risks going into Pakistan, but they were doing it in part because of the sacrifices that were made in the state.
That state being New York and New York City. Jack Beatty, Osama bin Laden had not been so much in public view lately, but boy, did it ring a national bell this week. You could hear the reverberations of 9/11 just surface everywhere again. Jack, I don't quite have – I can't quite –
What's true – that Pakistan is vitally important to us. The sentence needs to be completed, though, because of the connection to Afghanistan, because of its border with Afghanistan, because that's how we resupply Afghanistan. Of course, equally, you could say Pakistan is important to the Taliban because it resupplies it. And that linchpin, I think, the Afghanistan linchpin is the one, I think, that is now even weaker in some ways than the Pakistan one. You have Dick Lugar, senator from Indiana, senior member of the Foreign Relations Committee, saying it's exceedingly difficult, he said this week, to conclude that our vast expenditures in Afghanistan represent a rational allocation of our resources. He's pointing to the efficacy of a raid taking out this top leader versus the quagmire of armies in Afghanistan, and he's saying, "Where's the payoff from that?" And when one hears the wish that and I guess it's more than that there are going to be some serious negotiations now with the Taliban, and I think many people hope that President Obama will use this moment of leverage to essentially, he's got some help from public opinion to talk to the Taliban, either directly or indirectly.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news. Osama bin Laden dead. Trouble with Pakistan. Navy SEALs in the spotlight all this week. Americans taking it all in. Karen DeYoung is with us from The Washington Post today. Kenneth Walsh from U.S. News and World Report. Jack Beatty's here. All kinds of angles this week, not least a big fascination with the SEAL team and technology that may have gone into the raid on that compound in northern Pakistan. Aviation experts saying that the team used top-secret stealth helicopters to go in, nearly silent, almost invisible to radar. Here's a comparison of the sounds of standard and stealth-modified Black Hawk choppers from ABC News.
This is what a standard Black Hawk helicopter sounds like. This is the sound of an earlier experimental version of a stealth helicopter.
Sounds like a little lawnmower. Americans interested in every angle of this week, not least whether or not photos of Osama bin Laden's dead body, and Al-Qaeda itself now acknowledging today and vowing revenge, as it says he is dead. But the president said no in the end. No photos of the body of bin Laden to be released.
It is important for us to make sure that very graphic photos of somebody who was shot in the head are not floating around as an incitement to additional violence, as a propaganda tool. That's not who we are.
The president went on 60 Minutes to say, we don't trot out this stuff as trophies. He said, we don't need to spike the football. Karen DeYoung, this is very emotional stuff, but it's also interesting, and there appears to have been some significant debate in the Obama administration about whether or not to release these photos. Take us into that, if you would, and how it finally was resolved.
Well, it's interesting to go back. This came up in Iraq also, where you had the death of Saddam Hussein's sons. At first, the photos weren't released. There was mm-hmm. some question as to whether or not they were dead. Finally, the photos were released. They weren't pretty, but I think they quieted that debate. Also, when Saddam Hussein was hung, the question of whether to release the pictures of that, I think they were released without the administration at the time having much to do with it. In this case, I think the president, according to his spokesman at least, was from the start against releasing these pictures. Every description we've had is that they're very gruesome, that while you can tell it is Osama bin Laden, based on the many other pictures that we have with him. He is disfigured. Some people in the administration, apparently, including the CIA director, Leon Panetta, felt like it was important to release them. They had a long discussion. Obama listened to everyone's views and basically ended up where he started, that it was not a good idea to release these photographs. And he made the points in the statement that you played, that it could result in more violence that it would be seen as a propaganda tool by the White House, that it was not in keeping with how he describes who we are, as he said. You know, the question seemed to have moved on a little bit this morning because Al-Qaeda, for the first time on various jihadist websites where they make announcements, announced this morning that Osama bin Laden was dead. Said that they would continue the fight, said that his death would not be in vain, and vowed to conduct more threats inside the United States. So that certainly, I think, goes a long way toward stilling those questions that may still come up.
Lots of angles to it. I mean, some looking for proof of death, some others kind of strand of, I don't know, bloodlust, taste for gore, some maybe just machismo. Ken, Jack, I want to get you, but let's get our listeners in. Greenville, Kentucky, Joe is calling. Hi, Joe. What do you think? You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Just want to thank you for taking my call today. And, you know, I wonder, you know, why these pictures haven't been released. And, you know, it just doesn't make sense that they wouldn't. It's like she was saying, you know, that, you know, the Saddam Hussein, you know, was a big radical figure and, you know, now they showed his pictures, and I just wonder what the big holdup is. I wonder why he wouldn't show them or why he's so sensitive to them.
Joe, I appreciate your call. Kenneth Walsh, speak to that. We heard the president say there's no need to spike the football, but Joe still got the question. How do you read this president and this decision?
Well, a couple of points. One is that it's interesting to look at what we learned about President Obama as a decision maker in this process, not only of the process of ordering the raid, but
cool
also,
hand Luke, they were calling him at the
right.
Yeah.
Some also critics. Also the decision to release the photograph. But, you know, and just the impression we've had of him have been reinforced. He is a very deliberative person. He is very unemotional. He operates in almost like a law professor in the sense of stating a preference, letting everybody around him ventilate their views. Unlike President Bush, for instance, who would have a gut feeling about things and sort of stay with that until he was persuaded otherwise. That's the way I understand it, at least. And there was a small circle of advisors around President Bush who he would debate things with. But President Obama seems to have a broader range of people he listens to, lets them have their opinions, and then decides. And then the other interesting thing I think we've learned about his decision-making is there was this big criticism of President Obama, as there have been criticisms of Democrats for a long time. Are they willing to pull the trigger? Are they weak on national defense? President Obama, of course, did pull the trigger, literally in this case. And I think as far as the picture goes, I think he's learned a lot about sort of this viral world we're in, with the birthers and the birth certificate issue. And he, I think, has concluded, in part because of his own experience with people who are willing to believe just about anything about him, that some people just cannot be persuaded, no matter what you put out there on a factual basis. And I think he feels, at least at this point, that he's not under great pressure from around the world, really, or even domestically, to put these pictures out. There are some people, such as the caller, who want to see the pictures. But I think he feels that this is pretty much settled in among the people that he's really trying to appeal to, that bin Laden is dead. And he feels that he's just not going to persuade people who are willing to believe otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, he not only pulled the trigger, he pulled it off, and this was some incredible mission which had not been pulled off before.
And a tremendous risk, too. This was a tremendously risky mission, and I'm sure Karen and Jack have followed this whole notion about this Jimmy Carter choppers going down in the desert trying to rescue the Iranian hostages so long ago.
Sure, yes.
This had to be going through their minds.
Absolutely, as they sat there. All kinds of opinions on the photographs. I mean, here's one from Jon Stewart on The Daily Show. He was making the case for releasing the photos of bin Laden's corpse.
Maybe we should always show pictures of bin Laden, pictures of our wounded service people, pictures of maimed innocent civilians. We can only make decisions about war if we see what war actually is, and not as a video game where bodies quickly disappear, leaving behind a shiny gold coin.
Jack Beatty, there's a kind of many angles in this. One is proof. That would seem to be out of the way with even Al-Qaeda acknowledging, saying bin Laden is dead. Then there's a kind of, I don't know, lust for revenge, heightened by getting the photo of the dead body out there. And then a kind of, I heard in some of the GOP remarks, almost machismo, like, why not? Come on, let's have it.
Yes, and then John Stewart's point. You know, a couple of years ago, the Pentagon adopted a policy whereby the press has to get permission from families to show any dead or wounded soldiers, and of course, families will not give that. One understands why that's done, and yet I think Stewart's point is well taken. We don't, because our vision is sanitized, we don't see the realities of war. You know, I was just reading Ian Hamilton. He was the general at Gallipoli. I was reading his battle report this week, and he talks about inspecting a trench, and at the end of the trench there were a pile of bodies, eight Australians, six Turks. And what had happened? They had killed each other with bayonets. That's war. Just picture that. Just hear that. And that kind of gruesomeness, which happens every second on the battlefield, we have this censorship that just comes down. And I really believe that at some level, it's morally disabling.
Well, you may be right, but I mean, everybody's thinking about bin Laden this week. I don't know about Turks in a trench. That's terrible in its own way. But the question here may be whether we ratchet up or ratchet down off of this, get off in some other direction. And then, Jack, as well this week, there was the question of actual credit, in spite of the fact that, as Ken says, President Obama pulled the trigger, pulled it off. Here was Sarah Palin, former Alaska governor at Colorado Christian University, the day after news of bin Laden's death, crediting former President Bush for the death of bin Laden.
Yesterday was a testament to the military's dedication and relentlessly hunting down an enemy through many years of war. And we thank our president, we thank President Bush for having made the right calls to set up this victory.
A little nod to Obama there, the president, but then President Bush in big lights. And it takes us, Karen DeYoung, into this question of whether or not torture brought information that made this raid possible. Where does that stand, Karen?
Well, you also had Vice President Cheney this week saying that he assumed that what he called the enhanced interrogation techniques mm-hmm. had some contribution to this. I don't think we know for sure. Certainly, some bits of the information came out of interrogations in Guantanamo and at the black sites where some detainees were formerly held. You know, the CIA and the administration have emphasized that this was sort of classic intelligence analysis, that over a period of years, it took together all kinds of little pinpoints of information and painstakingly put them together almost as an enormous jigsaw puzzle, that the initial decision that led to all of this was to concentrate not so much on where is bin Laden, mm-hmm. but how does he support himself where he is, that in order to get communications out and get supplies in, he has to have a network. There have to be people who know where he is. And so rather than trying to locate him ourselves, we would start trying to locate those people. And they have acknowledged that the initial tip about a courier who was close to bin Laden, who carried these messages back and forth, that initial tip came from an interrogation. We don't know exactly what kind of interrogation. And once they had that, it took them several more years to actually get the name of this person. That then took them another extended period of time to locate this person, to locate the compound in Abbottabad in, mm-hmm. in Pakistan, and to start watching it, both certainly from way up high in the sky and ultimately from down on the ground. And the administration, I think, has gone out of its way to say, thank you, Bush administration. Obviously, this has been a very long-term effort, much of it conducted under the previous administration. So they've said that. But it's been, as I say, Vice President Cheney, former Vice President Cheney, and other members of the Bush administration have pushed in public forums here around Washington. They've been in a lot of discussions that have been open to the public, have kind of patted themselves on the back.
All in the flow of Bin Laden news this week, people looking for credit. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. You say we don't know where the information come from. Republicans, no small number, willing to say this week. Here was Peter King of New York, Republican congressman, on the O'Reilly Factor on Monday.
Well, I don't know if everyone knows this or not, but you mentioned the fact that we obtained information several years ago, vital information about the courier for Obama. We obtained that information through waterboarding. And so for those who say that waterboarding doesn't work, to say that it should be stopped and never used again, we got vital information which directly led us to Bin Laden.
Wow.
So he says, Steve in Waterloo, Iowa. Steve, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
How you doing, Tom? Okay. My question, and I just want to make a small comment.
Yes, sir.
I'm a military veteran, done tours in Iraq, seen a lot of different things going on over there. During that time frame from 2003 until until now, we've seen multiple cases on the media of, like, the burning of the Blackhawk Down
in Mogadishu in Somalia, yeah.
No, we've seen Mogadishu also. The Rangers getting dragged to the street. We've also seen the burning of the on the Fallujah Bridge of the,
yes,
of the Blackwater workers. We've seen multiple pictures of different deaths and different things. This right here, for military personnel and the American people, I believe this will be a type of closure. As gory, I'm pretty sure they can make these pictures as ungraphic as they want to. Uda and Kuse were put on the television after autopsy photos and everything.
Yeah.
And they showed them plenty of times. I was watching one of the CNN or Wolf Blitzer or something the other day. They showed these pictures just plain day.
Steve, this is really interesting, but let me ask you, and we remember this whole cascade of pictures you're talking about, those American bodies hung from the bridge in Fallujah and all the rest. Of course, there have been the others. You know, we saw the torture photos out of Iraq and the rest. But is it worth it in terms of America's long-term interest? I mean, President Obama is saying, don't spike the football. Don't throw it in people's faces. The deed is done. I mean, do we want to would it ratchet up? Don't we need to ratchet down, Steve?
No. I understand that. I do understand the president. I do understand him trying to be very candid on this situation.
Yep.
And try not to bring it to a political light. But at the same time, we do need to get this part out. This is war, just like somebody had just said on there. This is war. It's gory. We've seen multiple pictures, World War II in color now. They're showing everything on those shows, Vietnam old photos. People can handle the gore, but what we can't handle is the fact that, I mean, a lot of soldiers that I know, my era, and when we served, we believe, I personally believe that Osama bin Laden for years was killed in Tora Bora. And I thought that somehow the military and the government was holding back.
Steve, I appreciate your call. Our time is short before the break. Jack, Steve saying, you know, there's not really room for discretion anymore. All the gore is out there. Americans have suffered. American troops have suffered, seeing colleagues, photos, you know, beheadings, all the rest. He just wants to see it. Now, you've got a kind of a anti-war moral case for it, Jack. His is something else a little bit there. You know, show me.
Yes, a feeling of justice I hear there. And, you know, our people have been, we've seen people beheaded. Let's see this guy get killed. One can feel a measure of that, at the same time recognize that it could get other servicemen or more Americans or more innocent people killed just because it would be so triumphalist. It would be clearly just dancing on his grave.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, if we can look away for a moment, the Mississippi so swollen, the Army Corps of Engineers controversially blew out a section of levee at Bird's Point, Missouri, flooding farmland to save Little Cairo, Illinois. Blowing the levee, and a massive cleanup begins after the twister onslaught in the South. Louisiana Task Force 1 leader Bruce Saltamaccia says the damage in Alabama is daunting.
In 32 years on the fire department, worked a few smaller, much smaller tornadoes. This, by far, is the most devastating thing I've seen.
Huge. Still a big, big challenge there. And a baseball no-hitter in Chicago. Twins announcer John Gordon called the final out of Francisco Liriano's no-hit game.
Here's the payoff pitch. And a line drive caught by Tolbert. He's done it. He has done it. Francisco Liriano has pitched a no-hitter.
We're looking at a week in the news, Bin Laden's death, the struggles in the south of Mississippi rising, and more to come on that front. Karen DeYoung of The Washington Post is with us, senior national security correspondent there. Kenneth Walsh, chief White House correspondent for U.S. News and World Report, is here. Jack Beatty's here as well. Here's Kent in Nashville, Tennessee. Kent, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm calling about the Bin Laden story. I wish that we could all take a breath and use common sense and talk about what we've actually accomplished. And it seems to me that all we've accomplished is entering in and ratcheting up this cycle of revenge which terrorism is based on. And how can death be a deterrent to someone who's willing to kill themselves and beyond that looking forward to martyrdom?
But would you not even have killed? You're not talking about photos. You say you would not even have gone after Bin Laden, Kent?
No, I'm not saying we shouldn't have gone after him. I wish we could have captured him alive.
I see.
Would have been his least of his wishes, I'm sure. And it may have been unavoidable killing the man, but for us to celebrate it and hear intelligent people like the president, whom I support, and Hillary Clinton saying this shows the terrorists that we won't forget, that's meaningless. And all it's saying, it reminds me of when Bush said, bring it on. It's just entering into this cycle and celebrating it, and that is not going to accomplish what we want if we really want to avoid terrorism.
Kent, I appreciate that's your call. I hear parts of what you're saying, but meaningless is hard to quite figure out. We've all seen the tape of Bin Laden describing how he imagined, designed, engineered the 9/11 attacks. You may not like it, but meaningless, I don't know. This alive or dead question, Karen DeYoung, can you cut through that? Do you think there was ever really a sliver of intention to bring him out alive? It all looks so kind of canned. The aircraft carrier ready for the burial at sea almost instantly. It looked as though death was kind of in the cards here.
Well, that's a very good question. I think that it's been a discussion and a debate in policy circles for a long time here. If you ever captured Bin Laden, what would you do with him? You can't take him to Guantanamo. You can't take him to Afghanistan. You can't take him to a secret site. What would you do with him? There has been some criticism here of saying that, well, this was an enormous amount of intelligence information that we could have gotten. Countering that is we got apparently a lot of intelligence information, mm-hmm. a lot of computers, a lot of information was lifted up and taken from that compound and is now being gone after. I think that we can't ignore the fact that symbols are important in this long war.
Yes.
And certainly if this mission had not succeeded, that would have been an enormous symbol for the other side.
Oh, yes.
I don't think we're going to know for sure, at least not for many years, what kind of resistance Osama bin Laden put up. We've learned from having been told initially that he had a gun, that he used a human shield, that in fact he was not armed, that he did not use a human shield.
Yeah.
Now that he was first encountered in a doorway and then turned around to enter into the room, and that the thought was that he was going for some kind of weapon, and that's why he was shot, even though we've been told the Special Operations Forces, the SEALs, were prepared to take him alive if he surrendered. Again, I don't think we're going to know the answer to that for a while. But again, the symbols are important. This is a symbol. The administration has tried, I think, apart from this kind of first day of triumphalism, has tried to sort of downplay it and not be ghoulish about it, not be triumphalist about it. You saw the president yesterday at Ground Zero, very subdued, mm-hmm. No public statements. And so I think that they're trying to back away from this, say, good, this is done. Let's move on. We've still got a war on our hands.
A big job done right there. Yes.
If I could add, Thomas, this is Ken Walsh. It's starting to remind me a little bit about the of President Bush the father at the end of the Soviet Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Remember how he was criticized for being too modest, for not celebrating when the Berlin Wall came down. In fact, the language is even similar. He said, well, I'm not going to go dance on the Berlin Wall to celebrate the end of communism. It is too triumphalist. It's going to make things more complicated in having a peaceful and smooth transition to the next phase of the sort of the world order. And I think that President Obama has taken a lesson from that. At least his instincts are very much similar to Bush's in this case. Some triumphalism initially, but then I think everybody sort of caught their breath in the administration, and I think their reaction is comparable to President Bush's, the father's, after the Berlin Wall fell, where the feeling was we just can't be triumphalist here. There's a lot of other things we have to worry about, and I'm getting a lot of resonance with that with President Obama today.
Something to be said for dignity there in a very coarse world. Andalusia, Alabama, John's calling. John, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, thanks. I'll get right to the point.
Mm-hmm.
President Obama is our elected commander-in-chief, and as such, he represents a range of personalities, one of which is, what sort of nation are we?
Mm-hmm.
And if we decide to show photographs that are very explicit, like I assume these are, that represents some sort of personality. In President Obama's opinion, mm-hmm. this is not the thing to do. This is not who we are. And as his representing us as a personality, that personality is what I think is important to get out to the world. If folks disagree with that, so be it. But the fact of the matter is, he is the elected president, and we should stand behind that. We should honor that and respect it. That's all I have to say. And
I think it's great, John. We've got it loud and clear, and I really appreciate it. There, you're going with the posture that he's struck. He's the president, and he's striking the right note for you. And I appreciate your call. One more here, Mark, Acton, Massachusetts. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
There's an opinion piece in Karen DeYoung's Washington Post this morning by Professors Charles and Gregory Fried entitled Torture Apologists Stain Triumph Over Bin Laden. And I think they make an excellent point. In short, what they say is, as Lincoln understood, the main damage torture inflicts is on the torturer. And I think it's a disgrace to try to use this tremendous victory as an attempt to justify torture. In my lifetime, we've gone from it being a truism that America doesn't torture to discussing just how effective it can be. Mr. Walsh wrote a piece a couple of months ago in which he talked about President Reagan as a believer in American exceptionalism, specifically that it could serve as a global model in its values of liberty and the protection of individual rights. And I think it's ironic that those people, primarily in his party, who most trumpet American exceptionalism, are the ones who advocate that when it comes to torture, we should behave just like the worst of everybody else.
Mark, I'm right there with you, but let me just ask you this question. If it should emerge, and that's a big if, I'm not just taking Peter King's word for it, but that this enhanced interrogation, torture, did deliver information that led to bin Laden, would that change your mind or not?
I have two comments. No, and as Senator McCain said in 2005, this isn't about them, this is about us. What kind of people are we? Do we intend to be? It's also there for a practical reason, to protect our own forces so that they're not tortured. And I would point you to the story this morning which indicated that there were CIA operatives in Abbottabad who kept the building under surveillance
yes.
for months.
Yes.
And that had nothing to do with torture. That was just good old-fashioned intelligence work that we probably could not have gotten away with if the Pakistanis had been alienated by us. I suspect what you're going to find is that the Pakistanis are putting on a bit of a charade that they didn't know anything about this. I can't imagine that American CIA operatives could be within eyeball distance of that house for months without some knowledge by the Pakistani government.
Well, many things are hard to imagine here, but then many, many things unfold as well. Mark, I appreciate your call. One more here from Pooler, Georgia, Damien on Route 95. Damien, thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
What do you think?
I would just like to say I'm also an Army veteran, and I would like to say I don't think that releasing the photos would really do anything. I think that it'll hurt our cause. It'll probably also incite a whole lot of violence. So I don't really think that it'll really do any good for anybody. I think that a victory is a victory, and we should just take it as a win. Al-Qaeda already said that he's dead. They confirmed it for us, so I think we should just take it as a win.
Damien, where, have you served in Afghanistan, in Iraq, what?
I served in Iraq. I was in there when the war started. We got out there for like 13 months, and I've seen a whole lot of stuff out there. So I would just like to take the win. I'm glad that he's done and over with, and we should just move on.
We got it, Damien. A victory is a victory. One more, Omaha, Nebraska. Stuart, you're on the air.
It just amuses me how, you know, the conservatives and some in the so-called liberal media can try to give credit to George Bush's policies having brought about the death of Bin Laden, but they're not willing to give George Bush's policies credit for the current state of the economy. And as far as the pictures goes, maybe President Barack Obama, mm-hmm. understands that to revel in the vanquishing of an enemy is a primal instinct. And if, you know, Americans, especially white Americans, want to claim their civility so much, they should actually live by it.
Live by civility. Stuart, we got that as well. I want to pick up on one thing you said about who's giving credit and who's not, because it came up last night or yesterday at this the first Republican presidential debate, as early as it is, as many people who were not there. Nevertheless, there was one in Greenville, South Carolina. Fox sponsored it. Former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty was there, and he praised President Obama for the Bin Laden raid, but also raised questions about his handling of foreign policy.
He did a good job, and I tip my cap to him in that moment. But that moment is not the sum total of America's foreign policy. He's made a number of other decisions relating to our security here and around the world that I don't agree with.
Ken Walsh, how do you see the events of this week factoring into the political season ahead? And what about that Republican gathering last night in South Carolina? What's beginning to shape up there, Ken?
Well, of course, this was the first debate of the 2012 season, and only really one of the top contenders, you know, the ones we perceive as top contenders, showed up. Tim Pawlenty, the former governor of Minnesota, whose comments you just used.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a very long process. I think that everybody was sort of feeling their way. You didn't have the people who are really going to be in this seriously at the debate. But I think I've talked to a number of pollsters in the last day or so, and the feeling on how this Bin Laden mission affects the political system is both Republicans and Democrats agree that Obama needs to pivot very quickly to the economy, to use whatever gains he's gotten in job approval and public esteem to try to move to get some compromises on cutting the deficit and reducing the national debt and that sort of thing. And Vice President Biden has convened this group of congressional leaders to try to get that done. There's some evidence that the White House is going to do that, moving quickly to the economy. But the other quick point is that the Republican and Democratic pollsters, and I was on a panel with them last night, mm-hmm. were saying that this is important for Obama in that this national security issue has been so much used against the Democrats for so long,
mm-hmm.
and this is such a visible and sort of
singular.
Successful,
mm-hmm.
singular, yes, a singular success, and Obama appears to have handled it brilliantly. I think that even Tim Pawlenty, I think, conceded that maybe didn't use mm-hmm. the word brilliantly. So this does change that national security dynamic. And it could be in a fundamental way for President Obama. This is a big success for him in erasing or at least easing that criticism that we've seen for so long that the Democrats are weak on national defense.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Jack Meade, what about it with the news of this week? A potential pivot point here in, I don't know, American foreign policy, American politics?
Well, you know, I've been thinking of a phrase of John Foster Dulles's from the 50s, agonizing reappraisal. For years it was a cliche in foreign policy parlance. And I'm just sensing that lots of things are up for discussion now that have never, not for a long time. Everything changes in the world except U.S. foreign policy. And more you're seeing these moments are used to sort of call into question the war on terror. Do we need a war on terror when we can do it with raids? the commitment to, quote, allies like Pakistan. George Will this week writing, maybe we should think about NATO again. And driving everything, the budget deficit and people's concern to somehow save something of our infrastructure and safety net. And the only way to do that is to change the foreign policy that sort of, you know, justifies the defense budget. So I just sense it that things are up for grabs in a way they haven't been in a long time.
Richard Lugar, Karen DeYoung, Ron Paul, as always, saying maybe it's time to get out of Afghanistan. Do you think this week's events change the pace of withdrawal there?
Well, I think that, you know, this was an issue even before the bin Laden thing. And this is where the economic argument and the foreign policy argument come together. Mm-hmm. You know, you saw during the political campaign last year where people would get up and they wouldn't say end war. They would say get out and stop spending so much money on the war. Jobs, not war.
Jobs, not war. That pressure may well grow. We'll soon be back in the whole big fiscal budget debate. We're still looking at that situation right across the country. Big questions there. Grateful to all of you for being with us today. Karen DeYoung at the Washington Post, senior national security correspondent and associate editor there. Karen, it's always great to have you. Thank you for being with us this week.
My pleasure, Tom.
Kenneth Walsh, chief White House correspondent for U.S. News and World Report. Same to you, Ken. Very, very grateful to you for being with us today.
Happy to be with you. Thank you.
And Jack Beatty, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
A page turns. A lot goes on. Osama bin Laden, gone. Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.